Welcome to the Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore. It is Wednesday, October the 20th, 2021. On this edition of the Politocrat, the Republicans kill voting rights in the Senate. It was exactly what you would expect. But we have work to do. Speeches, you will be hearing two important ones on the Senate floor today, plus a few other thoughts coming up next.
Now, I understand what politics is all about. I know how you can go after one another, and that's good. But I think this goes too far. And I think it has made the McCain campaign look a little narrow. It's not what the American people are looking for. And I look at these kinds of approaches to the campaign, and they trouble me. And the party has moved even further to the right, and Governor Palin has indicated a further rightward shift. I would have difficulty with two more conservative appointments to the Supreme Court, but that's what we'd be looking at in a McCain administration. I'm also troubled by not what Senator McCain says, but what members of the party say. And it is permitted to be said such things as, well, you know that Mr. Obama is a Muslim. Well, the correct answer is he is not a Muslim. He's a Christian. He's always been a Christian. But the really right answer is, what if he is? Is there something wrong with being a Muslim in this country? The answer is no, that's not America. Is there something wrong with some 7-year-old Muslim American kid believing that he or she could be president? Yet I have heard senior members of my own party drop this suggestion. He's a Muslim and he might be associated with terrorists. This is not the way we should be doing it in America.
Well said, General Colin Powell. Well said. That was Colin Powell, the now late Colin Powell. Back in 2008, on October the 19th. So that was exactly 13 years and one day ago. Today. And that's a really important point he makes. No, we shouldn't be doing what we're doing. And the Republicans shouldn't be doing what they are doing, but the system allows it because that is the system that we have that has been designed to exactly do this. Everything that happened today on the floor of the House, and by the way, I'm going to get to the House, excuse me, on the Senate in a few moments, but everything is tied in with the system. I want to just add one thing, though, to what Colin Powell said. Back in 2008, because our culture must change. This country must change. The system has to go in its present form. There is no chance that we can put up with a system like this anymore. A system that has 147 Republicans in it who voted to overturn election results. And I almost said the other word. Overturn that. I don't know where my head is, but I'm trying to say the word election. Overturn election results. 147 of these Republicans voted to overturn certified election results on January 6th and into the early morning hours of January 7th. That's what they did. They voted to do that. Now, they failed, but that's not the point. 147 of them voted for it, and they're still in Congress. That's the problem, right? We can have as many January 6th commissions as we'd like, but if you're not jailing the people who are sitting next to you in these House commissions, then what's the point? Why are you having the commission if you're not jailing Paul Gosar, if you're not jailing Andy Biggs, if you're not jailing Lauren Boebert, if you're not jailing Marjorie Taylor Greene? Why have the commissions? The people are sitting right next to you. Should be jailed. Jim Jordan. He voted against, he was one of these people, along with all the others I just mentioned, who voted against certifying these results. So why is there a commission going on and you're not arresting and jailing all the people I've just mentioned, plus the other 130 plus odd Republicans? And that's the system. That's the reason why nothing's happening, because that's the system that is designed in this manner so that there are no arrests of people who have voted to to try to overturn results. That's the reason. That's the reason. I'm going to take a quick break here and come back. And I want to just get into this a bit more. And then you're going to be hearing a few speeches, but I want to come back and I just want to leave that with you for this moment. The system is designed to do what it is doing. It's not broken. It's not failing. I mean, it's failing for us, but it's not failing for the people who designed it. It's going quite swimmingly, thank you very much. You've still got an electoral college. How come that's not been scrapped? It's part of the system. Scrap the electoral college. Let the majority vote rule. Oh, no, that's not happening. That electoral college was designed in enslavement, and we still have it now. Think about that. That's still here now. We don't need the electoral college. Should never have been in the first place. It's still here. I don't see people going, we need to ban the electoral college. I don't see any of these politicians saying that. And the Republicans would never say it. Where, you need to get rid of that. It's a systemic relic, but it's still here. And so is voter suppression and anti-voting by Republicans. I'll take a break right now and come right back.
General Power, as he prefers to be called, was the first African-American National Security Advisor, first African-American Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff and Secretary of State, and had 35 years of service in the military to this nation. He described himself in a New York Times article, and he talked about himself in the third person. Powell is a problem solver. He was taught as a soldier to solve problems. So he has views, but he's not an analog. He has passion, but he is not a fanatic. He's first and foremost a problem solver, and that he did. In Vietnam, he was a hero when a helicopter crashed that he was in, and he pulled out his commander, Major James Charles M. Geddes. But also, he was a passionate servant of the people. When he retired, he organized America's Promise. America's Promise helped at-risk children. I remember seeing his program, hearing about his program, and supporting his program. To his wonderful wife, Alma, and his children, he remained to us an extremely beloved individual, and I am reminding of all Americans, let us remember that a general can be soft and strong. He remain a hero to all of us in nature, spirit, sacrifice, and deeds. The nation has lost a great leader, but more importantly, the nation has lost a symbol of what is best and great about America. I yield back.
That was Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee out of the 18th Congressional District in Texas. The Democratic congresswoman talking today about General Colin Powell, who passed away on Monday. Very sad, actually. I kind of am feeling more sad about Colin Powell, actually, in these last couple of days. You know, it's just been very sad. Just the idea that he was fully vaccinated and, didn't stop. This virus is just horrible. It's horrible. And I know he had underlying conditions. It's not the point. It doesn't matter one way or the other about the underlying conditions. It's this virus. And then there's lots of things I didn't know about Colin. Before I get back to the main topic of conversation, I didn't know these things, that he had Parkinson's. I don't think that was disclosed publicly. And I don't think that it was publicly disclosed that he had had prostate cancer surgery? I mean, if he did, if that was disclosed, I was sleeping. And also that he had multiple myeloma. I don't think that was publicly disclosed either. And you would think that with public officials and public figures, you would get that information disclosed. But I guess, obviously, that was not the case for General Powell. And that was a very nice tribute, by the way, from Sheila Jackson Lee, the representative out of Texas, as I mentioned. I just liked the way that she chose to use a clip to describe the words of Colin Powell as spoken by General Powell as he was speaking in the third person about himself. I just think that that's, there's something to that that's kind of cool, if you will. Look, as I said before, I like with Sir David Amos, I did not agree with Colin Powell going into the UN. I thought that was an absolute disaster. He was the good soldier to the end, Colin Powell, as I said in the episode on Monday. Colin Powell had been spent basically 40 years, 50, almost 50 years of his life following orders or giving them. I mean, again, I'm not providing excuses. I'm just providing an illustration. And I don't condone what he did. I understand it, given the fact that he spent, 40, 50 years in the military, fought in Vietnam. He was the good soldier, as I mentioned on Monday. He was the good soldier. And I put quotes around that word. Because, again, you know, it's a difficult situation, quite frankly, because he has integrity, but he didn't in that moment. And, you know, when your commander-in-chief tells you or trots you out there, whether it was him or Cheney, the real commander-in-chief we know was Dick Cheney. But when your commander-in-chief trots you out there and says, you've got to do this, either you resign or you do what the commander-in-chief says. And people said that Colin Powell should have resigned, and perhaps he should have. But knowing Colin Powell as someone who is a servant to the country, servant in the military, general in the military, leader in the military, someone who fought in the military, took orders in the military, gave orders, there was no way in America that he was not going to go through that. And if you are of that background, rare is the person who is going to walk away from that. I dare say that some of the people who say, well, Colin Powell should have resigned, I bet you half of them would not have resigned. I bet you they wouldn't have. I bet you anything. It's easy from across the, you know, Monday morning quarterback seat in that seat. It's easy. I mean, I'm not supporting his decision to go before the UN. I'm just saying that, as I said before, I think that Colin Powell did more good in his life than bad. And I think that people who don't agree with that, I think are being really dishonest with themselves. The guy served this country. The guy was someone who fought in Vietnam. The guy was someone who did not believe in war first. He believed in war as a very last resort. The guy believed in, if you go in, you own this. And you're going to have to use the force that you must use overwhelmingly in order to get in and get out. He wanted to be in there as quickly and as quickly as possible and out again. You know, he is somebody who is a moderate. I don't agree with his politics. But he definitely wanted to be a consensus builder. He was not a hawk. But anyway, look, I'm not trying to get people who already don't like Colin Powell to like him. I think I liked him after 2003. I didn't like him in 2003 and quite frankly, even before it. But anyway, I don't mean to go off script too much. Well, there is no script on this particular podcast. I think you know that by now, dear listener. But just to say that Colin Powell, I think, would have spoken up about voting in the country. And I think he spoke up about it in the last few years of his life, too. Because voting is critical, and I want to get to that now. Today on the Senate floor, every single last one of the 50 Republicans, 5-0 Republicans, voted to block debate on a watered-down voting rights bill. Watered down. I mean, it provided some things. Joe Manchin agreed to, right? Watered down. This was not some John Lewis, even though John Lewis bill is going to come up, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But this was watered down. This was not anything. This did the bare minimum. 14 days of early voting, the bare minimum. And these Republicans said, oh no, we're not even going to have debate, let alone have a vote on the actual bill. And they've done this before. They did this with the Senate January 6th Commission. We're not even going to have debate on that. They blocked debate on that too. They blocked debate on a couple of other things as well. One of the infrastructure bills, I think it was. We're not even going to have debate on it. This is an entire political party we're talking about. It's not one or two rogues. This isn't one or two people like we have in our party, the rogues, right? The mansions and the cinemas. This is an entire party. This is why I said, dear listener, not to focus on the shiny object. Because that's what the corporate news media does with Manchin. Ooh, he's the shiny object. And they're all going up to him, interviewing him. He's on the, oh, shucks. Oh, well, you know, I'm not a liberal. I never was. Oh, shucks. You know, I'm old Joe Manchin. Oh, see, I'm just, oh, shucks, you know. And I talked to the president, Oh, he's such a lovely guy. And, you know, he said, Joe, you know, I don't want to get in the way of your convictions now. That's the shiny object that the corporate news media is chasing after. And people on Twitter are chasing after the shiny object. They're bashing Manchin. And as I said, they have a right to go after Manchin. We should go after him. But we've got work to do. We have educating to do. And the work is to vote our asses off, number one. Number two is to educate people to vote. And number three is to make sure we vote in as many Democrats, preferably the progressive kind, but to vote in as many Democrats as possible, whether they are moderate or not. Vote them in so that we can make people like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema irrelevant. And then they can slide into the Republican column if they wish, if they want to. There are 34 United States Senate seats up for grabs, at least 34 at this moment. 24 of them are in Republican hands at the moment. 10 of them are in Democratic hands. We have got to get at least 10, I would say. I said 8, I think, the day before yesterday, or whenever I said it. But we've got to get at least 10, I think, of these seats while holding on to the 10 we have up for grabs. We need to do that. We need to do that. And then we can cast aside the Sinemas and the Manchins. They will be irrelevant. When we start with this nonsense about, oh, Manchin, oh, this, the Manchin. Yeah, Manchin, it's not nonsense, but Manchin is not the only focus. The Republicans must be the greater focus here. They are the damaging object in the room. Yeah, Manchin's an obstructionist. He's a Dixiecrat. Yeah. But it's these freaking Republicans who are doing the damage. The real damage. And I've said this over and over and over again. Even though I've been very critical of some of the Democrats, I've always told you that the Republicans are traitors. They are treasonous. I did an episode very recently about these 147. I read out their names. These were 147 Republicans who are voting against legitimate results. I told you. These Republicans are traitors. I've gone on and on about the history of this with Nixon, with Reagan. Not to mention the orange nightmare that we had, who collaborated with Putin. I've done this, gone on and on. They have a long history of this. And the media has got to stop kissing the ring of Joe Manchin, and they've got to stop kissing the ring of these Republicans. Always on these talk shows that you watch, these Sunday morning shows. And they're always framing the narrative in a way that makes it seem like it's supposed to be one party versus the other. But this is one party versus America. This is one party versus you. This isn't one party versus another. It's one party against Americans and against a way of voting. It's one party against voting, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice only for Republicans. That's what this is. That's what this is. And the corporate news media is never going to talk about it like that. I mean, I was sitting in on a call earlier today with Mark Elias and hundreds of other people on Twitter, Democracy Docket, which I recommend that you subscribe to and follow on Twitter, and really understand that this is really good information you're getting from Mark Elias, an attorney who is, with his team of lawyers, fighting back against these Republicans who are trying to desecrate everything called voting you can think of. And I think Mark Elias has been and there are other people doing this, but Mark Elias has been really one of the very, very good soldiers out here. Black voters matter have been as well, with Latosha Brown and Cliff Albright and a number of others. Voto Latino. I've mentioned a number of these organizations before, but this is the thing that needs to happen. You know, we need to have continued focus on voting. You know, we do, because without voting, we ain't got nothing. And I think it's about time we started to get real and proactive. And when these Republicans today said, nope, we're all voting against it, we're voting against having a conversation, that shows you the fascist nature of this Republican Party. They are the obstacle to all of us having better lives. It is that simple. The Republican Party, criminal syndicate, is the obstacle to us having better lives inside the United States. It's a fact. It's a fact. Without Republicans in our way, we would, I think, have a better country. We'd have, I think, better health care. I think we'd have all of these things. Now, there'd be some, of course, there'd be one or two conservative Democrats and moderates doing things to try to block it. But we would easily be able to do this. We'd be able to do this. We'd be able to have a better life. I'm telling you. It would. There's no question about it. No question. I'm telling you. No question about it. We have to understand that this is not Democrats versus Republicans. This is about Republicans versus the country. And the corporate news media must frame it that way. When you vote to shut down debate on a watered-down-ass bill, this thing was weak. It was good, but it wasn't stronger than what was there before. Manchin didn't want the For the People Act. Manchin didn't want the... You all treat Manchin like he's God or something. And I'm telling you, we are stronger than Manchin is. And we are stronger than him when we vote. Either vote Manchin out in West Virginia, or we just all over the country, when these Senate seats are up next year, we need to vote in Democrats across the board. As many as possible. I don't think there's a question. We have to do it. So let's get it done. There is no question about this. And, you know, people say democracy. Democracy, shamocracy. Fact of the matter is that I don't ever think there's been democracy in this country except for rich white men who've had this. Other than that, none of us have really had it. I really don't think so. I want to turn to a speech that Senator Amy Klobuchar made before the vote to block debate. It's essentially a filibuster that the Republicans put up today on the Senate floor. Here's a really good, impassioned speech by Senator Amy Klobuchar, the Democrat out of Minnesota. She is part of the group of senators in the Democratic Party who are very strong on voting rights and part of a group who are very, very steadfast about this. You have to listen to this speech. I think it's very important. It's a really good speech. I like it. And good on Senator Klobuchar. This is about 10 and a half minutes, so please bear with me. It seems like a long speech, but it's really not. She absolutely lays it out here, and I'm not going to give anything more away than that. Take it away, Senator Klobuchar.
Mr. President, I come to the floor to speak in support of what is right before us right now. and that is proceeding to debate legislation that is critical to our democracy, the Freedom to Vote Act, which I introduced with the members of the Voting Rights Working Group assembled by Leader Schumer. That would be Senators Manchin, Merkley, Padilla, King, Kaine, Tester, and Warnock. We all have our names on this bill. We all feel very strongly about this bill. Why? Because the freedom to vote is fundamental to all of our freedoms, and it is currently under attack. Since the 2020 elections, we have seen a persistent and coordinated assault on the freedom to vote. But it has been under attack for much longer as states have closed polling locations on a massive scale and purged hundreds of thousands of voters from the rolls, and as foreign adversaries have actually attempted to interfere in our elections. These attacks on our democracy demand a federal response. When you have one state attacked by a foreign adversary when they try to get in the voter rolls of Illinois or Hawaii, are we going to expect those states to respond on their own? When we have an assault, a coordinated assault on voting rights, so that you have similar bills introduced across the country to limit drop-off boxes, when you have coordinated attacks to limit vote by mail, when you have coordinated attacks to limit registration to vote, it demands a federal response. And what is amazing about our Constitution is that the Founding Fathers anticipated this, because right in the Constitution, it says that Congress, this place where we work, can make and alter the laws regarding federal elections. It is bulletproof. It has been upheld time and time again. The urgent need for action could not be more serious. With over 400 bills having been introduced in nearly every state to limit the freedom to vote, and over 30 of those have been signed into law, with redistricting underway to draw congressional maps that will define our democracy for the next decade. And the first primary for the 2022 elections is in a little over 4 months in Texas. We must act now. It has been over 9 months. Just 9 months since that violent mob of insurrectionists stormed into this chamber, opened up people's desks, sat where the presiding officer is sitting right now. They desecrated our Capitol, the temple of our democracy. This was not just an attack on a building. It was an attack on our republic. It was an attack on public servants, police officers who were serving us that day. And as I said from the inaugural stage just 2 weeks later, under that beautiful blue sky at the very place where you could still see the spray paint on the columns, where we stood in front of makeshift windows, where we stood leaders of both political parties in both chambers and from across the nation together, I said, this is a day our democracy picks itself up, brushes itself off, and does what America always does, goes forward as one nation under God, indivisible with liberty and justice for all. We took back our democracy that day. And with this Freedom to Vote Act, which includes provisions that have the support of 78% of Americans who favor 2 weeks of early voting and 83% of voters who support public disclosure of campaign contributions because they believe the people should be running the government, not lobbyists, not outside groups, we will take it back again from those who are trying to take away people's constitutional right to vote. With 19 states having enacted laws this year to roll back the freedom to vote, we can't simply sit back and watch our democracy be threatened, whether it be threatened with bear spray, crowbars, axes, or whether it be threatened with long lines, no ballot drop-off boxes, and secret money. We must stand up for our democracy, whether we're Democrats or Republicans or independents. That's what our country's about. When we are faced with a coordinated effort across our country to limit the freedom to vote, we must stand up and do what is right. But as we have seen in states like Georgia and Florida and Iowa and Montana and last month in Texas, we are up against a coordinated attack. As Senator Reverend Raphael Warnock has said, it's really quite simple. Some people don't want some people to vote. That's what this is about. What is this Freedom to Vote Act about? It is about minimum standards for voting. You know, 15 days early voting. My state goes up over 40 days. That's not what we put in this bill. We put minimum standards in this bill, ensuring voters have access to at least 2 weeks of early voting. Voters so they can cast their mail-in ballot without an excuse, something people were able to use as a way to safely vote in the middle of a public health crisis. And they did it in record numbers in the middle of a crisis because they believed in our democracy, no matter which way they voted. Why would we take away that right from them now? Well, you are seeing a curtailing of that right in many states across this country. It counters partisan interference in election administration, makes sure that these super PACs and issue advocacy groups that hide behind veils have to show who's giving them the money, prohibits partisan gerrymandering. And then we listen to Secretary of State across the country, Democrats and Republicans. We listen to our colleague, Senator Manchin, who proudly has his name on this bill. So what did we do? We made changes to this bill. It provides flexibility for small and vote-by-mail jurisdictions on early voting. It makes it easier to implement automatic voting registration. It creates a new flexible source of federal funding to help our states. It ensures election officials can use best practices for maintaining accurate and up-to-date voter rolls. It is important to recognize that the Freedom to Vote Act is the first piece of voting rights legislation this Congress to come to the Senate floor with the support of all 50 Senate Democrats. Now, our Republican colleagues may not agree with everything in this bill. Okay, then don't be scared. Don't hide behind your desk. Don't deny us the right to simply debate this bill. Our leader, Senator Schumer, has made it very clear. We are open to amendments on this bill. We welcome your amendments. We're not putting a limit on amendments. So why would you shy away from debating this bill unless you just don't want the American people to hear the truth? Unless you don't want the stories told about what's going on in places like Georgia, where voters are now being asked to put their birth date on the outside of the inside envelope. Or maybe you don't want to have the stories told about how voters in Wisconsin, almost except for the governor stopping it in its tracks, that voters of Wisconsin almost were limited in the entire city of Milwaukee to one drop-off box. That bill passed their legislature. That's what we're talking about here. So let's have this debate. Let's hear the argument. Let's not stop the debate over the fundamental right to vote that our entire democracy is founded on. If our Republican colleagues have constructive ideas on ways to improve this legislation, if they are willing to work with us on amendments, then we are prepared to hear them. We are simply asking them to open up the debate. Instead, it'll be more people standing in line like they did in Wisconsin in the primary in homemade masks and garbage bags in a rainstorm just to exercise their right to vote. It's going to be people that are told, like they just are in Georgia, you can't even vote on weekends in the runoff period. It's going to be people who served in our military, who have had to wait in line in the hot sun to wait for hours to vote. That didn't help when they happened when they signed up to serve our country, but it happens when they try to vote. Let's have that debate. Americans have fought and died to protect our freedom to vote. They've done so on the battlefield, and they've done so in marches during the civil rights movement, and 56 years after the Voting Rights Act was passed by this chamber and signed into law, we cannot shut down the debate. Our nation was founded on the ideals of democracy, and we've seen for ourselves in this very building that we can't afford to take that for granted. We can't do it when legislators, and members of Congress get to pick and choose who's going to be able to vote easily. We do it by debating real ideas and standing on the shoulders of those who went out to vote. That's what a democracy is about. I urge my colleagues to open up the debate, to not be afraid to shut down the debate, to not hide under their desks, to not put their heads down. I urge them to simply open up the debate. Thank you, Madam President. I yield the floor.
That was Senator Amy Klobuchar earlier today on the Senate floor, begging, really, I mean, pleading, an impassioned speech, really, I think, an excellent speech, and laid out everything. You know, of course, we aren't a nation founded on democracy. I mean, that's, of course, where I obviously take issue with that kind of thread that was going on in part of her speech. But look, Amy Klobuchar, the senator out of Minnesota, I think made an excellent point throughout that speech and challenged the Republicans, which we need more Democrats to do on the floor and challenge them. These people are destroying the country. They don't care about the country. They care about their rich billionaire donors and the dark money. They don't care about you and me. They care about power. That's what they care about, power. It's as simple as. I'm not talking about the power that runs through your, you know, your light bulbs. I'm talking, no, not wattage. I'm talking about political power and control and money. That's what they care about. They don't care about you. They don't care about me. They don't care about us. They care about power. And if we don't vote in these midterms, they're going to be in power for a long time to come. Because by the time all of these state legislatures, which are Republican-led, get done passing all these anti-voting laws, you're not going to be able to vote at all. You're going to have a fascist government. You're going to have autocracy. Some people think we already do have it. It's just disgusting. And yet, here we are on the precipice of it. We are. We're on the precipice of it. If we do not vote next year in these midterms. That's why I said these midterms have basically started now. And I say over and over, dear listener, do not wait until next year to start getting involved. We need to be doing this now. We need to be educating each other now. And I'm going to, I endeavor to do this, dear listener, to continue to give you information that you may not have had the chance to look at, you may not have been aware of, you're very busy, we all live busy lives, and you may not have seen any of some of the things that I am going to be drawing your attention to, and you may not have heard them, because your corporate news media that you watch aren't going to play. They aren't going to play the speech that you just heard, that I played from Senator Amy Klobuchar. They're not going to play the whole thing. You'll be lucky if they even refer to it. That was a really good speech by Senator Klobuchar. And I just hope that if you've heard it, you pass it on. Pass along what you heard. Sounds at one point as if she's going to cry. She really is very serious about what's going on. She's not messing around, and nor should we. We need to get involved. I said it over and over and over again. Dear listener, we've got to get involved here. We can't just go, oh, okay, someone else will do it. No, it's got to be us. We got to do it. We got to get in there. And absolutely give what for. We got to let these politicians know that we want this, that, and the other. We have to educate each other. We have to educate people. We have to pass this knowledge along. We can't just go, ooh, that's good knowledge. I'll employ it for next time. But not tell anyone else. People who do that are obstacles to this whole thing as well. If you're the kind of person who is listening to this but not passing on the knowledge, passing on the information, you are also getting in the way of what we need to be doing. We need to spread information around, not just keep it to ourselves. That doesn't help us. Doesn't help anybody. We've got to get involved. Now, when I come back, you have to hear the speech from Senator Chuck Schumer, the Majority Leader of the United States Senate. Welcome back. Dear listener, after the vote today in the United States Senate, where all 50 Republicans voted to end, not even end, voted not to even debate on the Senate floor the legislation that was agreed to by Manchin and all these other moderates and, you know, everybody else. After that vote, which was really, the final was 49 to 51. Now, the only Democrat who changed their vote to a no vote was the Majority Leader of the Senate, the Democrat, Chuck Schumer. Now, the reason he did that was for a procedural reason, so that next week or whenever he wanted to in the session, he would be able to, bring up the motion again for another transit debate. That's the reason why he voted no. There is a parliamentary rule in the Senate that allows for that for the purposes of procedural vote. But when the record is looked at, the vote will actually be a 50-50 vote, with Schumer voting yes to extend and to have debate at all. But if you do vote no and put the no's in the majority, apparently you have, I didn't even know about this, I should have known, but I don't, didn't know, that for procedural reasons, you can vote no so that you, in the nay column, voting no, because your side won, you have a chance to bring up the motion again or talk about it again. And so that's what Chuck Schumer did after this vote that went 49 to 51. You needed 60 votes, 60 yes votes, to have any debate on this bill for voting rights. And not one Republican voted yes. Not one. All the whole party. So the whole party are a bunch of traitors. The whole party wants to destroy voting rights. And how dare, and I don't watch them, but I'm going to just pretend that this is exactly how they were, the media. How dare the media, the corporate news media, act as if that is not what is going on. Whole blooming political party wants to destroy your vote, wants to destroy any semblance of voting in this country for black people, for brown people, for native people, wants to destroy that, and for some poor white people as well, wants to destroy that. And the corporate news media is not talking about that. Oh, it's Democrats against Republicans. Is it? Is it? Or is it Republicans against the country? Or is it Republicans against all of us? Or is it Republicans against voting, period? I think it's all of the above for those last few that I mentioned. But what do you expect from the corporate news media? They're people that own that are very powerful and rich. And they're giving money to Republicans. I'm sure they are. Go and search on opensecrets.org. You find out all about who gives what to whom in politics. That's why Senator Klobuchar's speech was really good. I really liked her speech. She talked about all of this. Dark money, all the rest of it. Jane Mayer's written a book. I've talked about that ad infinitum. Jane Mayer, last name spelled M-A-Y-E-R, just like John Mayer. They are not related, as far as I know. Nor is Milton Mayer related to either of them, as far as I know. Milton Mayer wrote the book They Thought They Were Free, F-R-E-E. They thought, T-H-O-U-G-H-T, they were free, F-R-E-E. The Germans, 1933 to 45. That is the book that he wrote. And I've talked about that book a billion times here. And I will revisit it again soon, because I think we are in that moment where we have to start looking back at books like this. I really think so. Very important speech today by Senator Klobuchar. Now, anyway, the Senate Majority Leader, Chuck Schumer, did put that procedural vote in no, so that he can have a chance to raise it again when needed. And he talks about what he's going to do next week with the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. Now, look, I want you to listen to this. Listen to it carefully. Chuck Schumer's making the case very strong here. And again, I think he's been really good, too, on this issue. You got to listen to this. It's about 7.5 minutes. Chuck Schumer on the Senate floor earlier today, the Majority Leader of the United States Senate, Chuck Schumer talking about the vote and these Republicans who need to be drummed out of office. This is right after the vote failed for the Democrats.
On this vote, the yeas are 49, the nays are 51. 3/5 of the senators duly chosen and sworn not having voted in the affirmative, the motion is not agreed to.
Madam President, I enter a motion to reconsider that the failed cloture vote.
The motion is entered.
Now, Madam President, I want to be clear about what just happened on the floor of the Senate. Every single Republican senator just blocked this chamber from having a debate, simply a debate, on protecting Americans' right to vote in free and fair elections. A little over a year ago, our country held the safest, most accessible, most on-the-level elections in modern history. Our former president could not accept defeat with grace. He refused to show fidelity to the democratic process. Instead, he told a big lie that has now poisoned the roots of our democracy. Capitalizing on this malicious lie, his acolytes in conservative-controlled legislatures are now passing laws across the country, making it harder for younger, poorer, urban, and non-white Americans to participate in our elections. The laws are a direct attack on our fundamental liberties as American citizens. If there's anything worthy of the Senate's attention, it's unquestionably this. And yet, given the chance to respond to an obvious problem, given the chance to merely debate these latest threats against the franchise, Senate Republicans voted unanimously, to block any opportunity for action. Let there be no mistake. Senate Republicans blocking debate today is an implicit endorsement of the horrid new voter suppression and election subversion laws pushed in conservative states across the country. By preventing the Senate from functioning as it was intended, Republicans in this body are permitting states to criminalize giving food and water to voters at the polls. Republicans are saying it's okay to limit polling places and voting hours and shut the door to more expansive vote by mail. I mean, my God, why aren't all of my colleagues outraged by these laws? Frankly, we haven't heard a clear explanation from Republicans at all, because they refused for this chamber to even hold a debate. It's ludicrous for them to simply state that the federal government has no role to play here. They should read the Constitution of these United States of America. It precisely empowers Congress to regulate the, quote, times, places, and manners, unquote, of holding elections. The Congress, us. Sometimes the federal government has been the only recourse when states conspire to shut voters out. Madam President, the fight to protect our democracy is far from over in the United States Senate. Senate Democrats have made clear that voting rights is not like other issues we deal with in this chamber. This isn't about regular old politics. It's not even just about regular policy. It's about protecting the very soul of this nation, about preserving our identity as a free people who are masters of our own destiny.
Republican obstruction is not a cause for throwing in the towel. As soon as next week, I'm prepared to bring the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act here to the floor. What we saw from Republicans today is not how the Senate is supposed to work. This is supposed the world's greatest deliberative body, where we debate, forge compromise, amend, and pass legislation to help the American people. That is the legacy of this great chamber. The Senate needs to be restored to its rightful status as the world's greatest deliberative body. Now, in the aftermath of the Civil War, and as the nation began the colossal work of Reconstruction, America was more divided than at any point in history. It was hard to imagine that a single nation could endure after the bloody conflict of the four previous years. At the time, the Republican Congress set to work on granting newly freed slaves the basic freedoms that had long been denied to them. These freedoms were eventually enshrined in the 14th and the 15th Amendments, granting due process and the right to vote to all citizens, regardless of color or race. Today, these amendments rank as some of the greatest and most revered accomplishments in congressional history. They are proof that our country is capable of living up to its founding promise, if we are willing to put in the work. But at the time, the minority party in both chambers refused to offer a single vote for any of the civil rights legislation put forward during Reconstruction. Not one vote. Not one vote. They argued these bills represented nothing more than the partisan interests of the majority, a power grab, they said, from vengeful Northerners. But that didn't stop the majority. If expanding basic freedoms meant going it alone, that was something they were willing to do. Today, we feel the same way. To the patriots after the Civil War, this wasn't partisan. It was patriotic. And American democracy is better off today because the patriots in this chamber at that time were undeterred by minority obstruction. Again, today, we feel the same way. Today, the question before the Senate is how we will find a path forward on protecting our freedoms in the 21st century. Members of this body now face a choice. They can follow in the footsteps of our patriotic predecessors in this chamber, or they can sit by as the fabric of our democracy unravels before our very eyes. I yield the floor.
Senator Chuck Schumer, the majority leader in the United States Senate, the Democrat out of New York, earlier today on the Senate floor, after the 50 Republicans in the United States Senate all voted no on the issue of debating a weakened voting rights legislation bill. Now, this bill has some good things in it, but it doesn't go as far as the original bill did, the For the People Act bill. It didn't go as far as that. As you heard there, Senator Schumer is going to be, or expecting to be, sometime next week, bringing up the John Lewis Voting Rights Act bill, Restoration Rights Act, for a vote. And you know what's going to happen. Both Senator Klobuchar and Senator Schumer knew that the Republicans were going to do this. They knew that. That's why the passion in their speech, especially in Klobuchar, Senator Klobuchar's speech, was there. But even if they didn't know, they care about these issues. Democrats, they care. You always have the one Democrat like Manchin or Sinema who doesn't. And the media is going to glob onto them, focus on the shiny object, because that's what the corporate news media does. And they're not going to talk about these disgusting Republicans. And they're not going to talk about the vast majority of the Democrats who want this voting rights bill passed. they're going to make this an issue of the Democrats and not the freaking Republicans, all 50 of whom in the Senate voted not to even have a debate. So-called freedom. Oh, freedom, oh, freedom. That's the party that screams freedom, and all these, you know, people going on about freedom. We don't want to be muzzled by wearing a mask, by having to wear a mask. Freedom, freedom. And these bastards are blocking everybody from voting. Freedom, my you-know-what. This is absolutely disgraceful, and you know this. We have to do something about this. We have to get out there and vote. Just like we did in 2020 when we voted in massive numbers during the height of the pandemic which continues on to this day. We've got to do this. And we've got to be aware of what we need to vote in this country, because in some states you need this, you need your ID, you need this, you need that, you need a piece of whatever, you need that, you need the other, you need all, you know, three hairs of a lamb's tail. I mean, you need all this crap just to freaking cast a vote in the country that's supposed to be the greatest country on earth. That's not right. Voting is precious. And for that reason, you need to have people voting. It's a check against power. It's the only check the people have. It's the only power we have in this country, is our vote and our voice, and our vote is our voice. We've got to do this. We've got no choice. We have to vote. And don't let anybody ever again tell you that voting doesn't matter. It certainly freaking does. Because if it didn't matter, you wouldn't have 50 Republicans voting no on even debating voting rights legislation on the Senate floor today. Don't tell me your vote doesn't count, and don't tell me voting doesn't freaking matter. It does. Don't ever let anybody tell you that voting doesn't count, and don't ever let anybody tell you that voting doesn't matter. When you got these Republicans in all these blooming states, in their state legislatures, passing these anti-voting bills. If voting didn't matter, and if voting didn't count, trust me, you would not have all of these Republican state legislatures all across the United States passing these anti-voting bills. Don't let anybody get away with that BS and tell you that, oh, voting doesn't count, oh, your vote won't count, your vote doesn't count. Don't be stupid, please. I'm not saying you, dear listener. I'm saying don't be stupid, the person saying that. Because the person saying that knows better. Your vote counts. It's the Republicans who don't want it to count. That's what's going on. We have to really sharpen up our brains here. And really get to grips with the fact that you've got a political party, a criminal syndicate, who wants to destroy what you do. Destroy your right to choose. They want to destroy healthcare. And they want to destroy your ability to even participate in a so-called democracy. They want to destroy education. They don't want you to have anything to do with Black history, or because it's American history. They don't want to teach that. These Republicans are the enemy of the United States, and it's about time that the corporate news media start talking like that. Of course they're not going to. So we must talk like that, and we must vote like that. And the enemy's got to be voted out of office. It really is that simple. Anybody who stands in your way of voting, anybody who stands in the way of education, anybody who stands in the way of healthcare, they're your enemy. Anybody who stands in the way of mask mandates, that's your enemy. They don't care about your health. They don't care about your life. So-called pro-lifers, and they don't care about your life. They want you to die. Don't wear your mask. Don't get a vaccination. We're pro-death penalty. Woo! We've got guns up the wazoo. Woo! We want to carry our guns wherever we want. Woo! We don't want to have any bans on assault weapons. Woo! And these are the pro-lifers. These are the people that go to abortion clinics and kill doctors. These are the people who stand outside abortion clinics and hound and threaten and harass the woman who's going in to have an abortion. These are the pro-lifers. Woo! These people aren't pro-lifers. These people are pro-death people. They are pro-death. They are pro-death of any so-called democracy. They're pro-death of healthcare. They're pro-death to education. They're pro-death to the country. They're pro-death to the country. And they're certainly pro-death to voting. These people want to stay in power forever. And every time that they pass an anti-voting bill in their Republican legislature, they are one step closer to that. I am going to continue on, dear listener, talking about what we need to do, what the game is, and what the game plan must be. Start off by following Democracy Docket on Twitter. Follow and start off by subscribing to the newsletter. And I'm going to be actually reading from that newsletter in some of these episodes because you need to be aware of what is going on in this country. And particularly for people who may be outside the country but don't really have a real sense of what's going on here inside the United States. And for people who are in the United States but don't really listen to the flavor of the news very often, don't have a sense of it. Corporate news media is not going to be going in depth on this. And if they do, it's usually accompanied by pundits who just say this and that and try to equivocate everything and make false equivalencies out of everything. And oh no, it's not really about Republicans destroying the country. It's about these pesky Democrats too. On both sides, that's the buzzword that's killed discourse in this country. On both sides. And it's not both sides nothing. It's one side. It's the Republicans who are destroying the country brick by blooming brick. And we have to fight back at the ballot box. And we have to be aware of what's going on. And we have to keep educating people, which is one of the things I'm going to be doing, as have others. I'm going to be doing that more. You're going to hear more of that here. So there'll be lots of other things too, but this is the most significant issue outside of a woman's right to choose. This is the most significant issue in the country. I think this is the most significant issue, voting, because everything else stems from voting. If you got no vote, you got no voice. If you can't vote, you can't do much of anything. You can't even fart if you can't vote. I mean, seriously. You can't even fart if you can't bloomin' vote. I mean, that sounds absurd, but come on. It's just, we are in some deep doo-doo. There is a way out of this. We just have to be bold enough to take that path and vote these horrible Republicans. Vote them out, vote them out, vote them out. And vote in Democrats, particularly progressive ones, but vote in Democrats who will do the bidding of the party and do the bidding of the president who says that he wants to see voting rights. And he has issued a statement earlier today about it, and that's good. We need to just keep the heat on and we need to vote. Literally, like our lives depended on it. And they do. Thank you very much for listening to this edition of The Politocrat. I'm Omar Moore.